I do want to say again a thank you to Randy and Kitty Trail for substituting last week. I will tell you that I went to Tennessee with a plan to completely empty my mother and dad's house and did not expect to be successful. This is something we've been working on for over a year, so most of the furniture was out, but there was just so much clutter that was still there. There were four or five women who came in. All these were people that knew my mom and dad. They were working for a thrift store that Habitat for Humanity runs in that community. And they worked for 2.5 days in the kitchens. There was a kitchen, main kitchen upstairs and an apartment kitchen downstairs. And they worked in those two, clearing all those out. And then I had some workmen that I hired to work with me, and we got the rest of the house cleaned out, rugs and everything else just gone. So that now there's some cosmetic work that needs to be done. It's going to be done without having clutter in the way. I will tell you, however, that you have not lived until you've had a 375-pound diabetic lose his balance and fall on top of you as you're sitting on the floor trying to hand things out. Be careful who you hire to work on your house. There are two of the workers were just outstanding, and one was outstanding most of the time. I will also tell you that the younger generation is alive and well. My grandson was over at the house last night. My son was out mowing the yard, and Barbara and I were leaving him in the care of our son. Now, our son has a lawnmower, so leaving him in the care of someone with a lawnmower is not necessarily the safest thing. And Barbara said, well, you know, you're going to be here with Brian, and you need to stay away from where he's mowing. And Carter's response was, that's okay, I'll go get my yellow lawnmower, and I'll mow over here. And she says, I didn't see you bring a lawnmower with you. And he says, grandmother, it's imaginary. That's good. He went down to the place we keep our lawnmower and got his yellow. He started it. Of course, it didn't start the first time. He said a couple of things that he's heard that you're supposed to say. Turns out we've apparently been really, really nice, because what he said was perfectly okay. Anyway, he did get it started, and he went off to mow the lawn, and all that's just, it's real good.
Walter's claiming you're embellishing.
Of course I am. That's the only story I've done. Well, it didn't start the first time, that part's true. Ask her about that. And there was a 375-pound diabetic, and he did fall on top of me. And there's part of that story I'm not telling you. And if I, so I, it averages out, the part that I'm adding, the part I'm leaving out. All right, we've been looking for a few weeks at terms that describe Jesus, and for a while we were looking at complementary terms that describe Jesus, and then terms that describe us in proper relationship to him. We come back now to look at just a few more, and again, we're not looking at all that we could, but we're looking at a few more where the term applies to Jesus, and there's not a complementary term that I can find that sets it up the same way. We're going to go today to the third of these terms. We will find our connection in the book of John, and it's in a section that if you've been faithful in an attendance during this time, you will have already heard us, because we've already been into this part before. When we came into this part earlier, we were on one of the complementary pairs of terms. We were on the term of shepherd for Jesus and sheep for us. And so it's John chapter 10 that we're going into. And what we're going to do is go back into the same section, reread the same thing we read before, but instead of picking up shepherd and sheep, we're going to pick up another picture that Jesus uses and work with that a little bit this morning. Okay? So chapter 10 of John, verse 1. In all truth I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold through the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a bandit. He who enters through the gate is the shepherd of the flock. The gatekeeper lets him in. The sheep hear his voice. One by one he calls his own sheep, and he leads them out. I'm told that sometimes sheep from several shepherds would be brought together into some kind of enclosure, and the shepherds would come one by one, and as they would call, those particular sheep would go out. Whether that's true or not, that's what I've been told, and it's the picture that you see here. When he has brought out all those that are his, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow because they know his voice. They will never follow a stranger, but will run away from him because they do not recognize the voice of strangers. Jesus told them this parable, but something happened. What happened? They failed to understand what he was saying to them. So he spoke to them again. In all truth, I tell you, I am the gate of the sheepfold. So there's our term for this morning. We're looking at gate, or some translations will say door. That's the term that we're looking at for today. I am the gate of the sheepfold. All who have come before me are thieves and bandits, but the sheep took no notice of them. I am the gate, or I am the door. Anyone who enters through me will be safe. Such a one will go in and out and will find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy, but I have come so that they may have life and have it to the full. So, Jesus as door or gate. What comes to your mind is what that represents? What does Jesus provide?
The way
the way to salvation, the way to God. What else? What else? Yeah, if we pick up on this, there's a parallel of roads and narrow and broad. Does anybody know the full name of the road that starts with broad in Richmond? Broad Street Road. Did you all know that there's anything? Paul Street Road, Perry Street Road. We're not going to go there today, but there is a parallel. And what I want to do is try to find how many things occur to you, and then you've got a list of things to ponder, and we'll go in and pick out one or two of those to explore more deeply. Okay? What other things come to your mind as you think of doors? Yes, ma'am.
An opening, maybe as part of the heart.
I heard you say opening, and I didn't catch it.
Maybe as far as your heart, not just the fact of going in physically.
Okay, an opening for your heart, an opening in your heart. There's maybe two different ways to say that, each with its own point.
If there's a door, then there is a specific place. You wouldn't see just a door standing in the middle of nothing, so it represents
Yeah, I'm going to write that down. Before I write that down, I want to know if anybody else thinks Blazing Saddles is one of the funniest movies ever made. Absolutely, absolutely. Does anybody remember that wonderful moment when they needed to slow down the bad guys and they put a toll booth out of the middle of nowhere? I apologize for that popping into my mind. At least once, Mel Brooks put a door out. So an entrance to a place of some kind.
When I think of the entrance, I think we have to make a choice not to go through that door.
I feel like Groucho Marx. Are you guys old enough to know anything about the last quiz show that he had?
When the bird came down?
Yeah, it was a specific bird. A duck comes down. When you say the secret word, the duck comes down, you win $100. Yeah. Well, I told you a little while ago we're going to look for a couple of things to explore. That's one of the ones we were going to look for. Now we found it, so we'll know that we're going to explore that a little bit.
In contrast to the entrance part, Bill, there's also an exit.
Yeah, and I tried to put a little emphasis on that as I read it. They will be able to go in and out. There's a door of escape from something. You might push that metaphor in that direction as well as a door of entrance. There's a door of exit or escape.
Exit one life to another.
Yeah, that's what I was going to change. It's a change in faith.
Say it again.
A change is indicated by that. That way, that seems to me indicates a change in going from one situation to another.
This morning, in the other hour, somebody used the word at about this point, as you were pondering these things, they used the word transition. As a way of expressing that. And what I want to do is I want to put a little, I'm not going to put it fully in orange because I don't know that we're going to have enough time to come back. But if we have a little bit of time, I'd like to come back and explore that a little bit, especially in the context of what the pastor said in our previous sermon. He said some things in there that I think would be important to connect. Brenda?
I was thinking access and invitation.
And if you'll permit me, in the first hour, when they were dealing with, when this idea sort of came up and they were tossing this around, they used the word welcome. And I think that might be, you've used the word invitation, which has part of that. The word welcome adds something to it, I think. And I understand all doors might not have that, but in the context of what Jesus is talking about, I think it does have that piece in it. Yeah.
Kind of along with that, a door can be locked or unlocked.
And if it's locked or unlocked, what else could it be? Open or closed. Okay. What does an open door represent?
Free to come in. That invitation.
Easy access. Freedom, invitation, access. Anybody want to see the duck drop? Keep going. One more word. Yes, ma'am.
And there again, if the door is closed, you have to put it into action. You have to either turn the handle or you have to knock.
So if I would say closed, but it could be open.
It could be open. You've gotten an invitation, but you go there and
there's still a potential for an invitation.
Yeah.
Everybody's welcome.
And you're actually going back to Jennifer's choice. You make a choice that you want to go through in close.
Yeah.
But you've gotten an invitation.
And the term I want to put next to choice is the term opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
When an opportunity comes, then you have a choice of accepting or not accepting that opportunity. It seems to me those are the two words that for me are hard. When T.W. Hunt was writing some of the things that I'm working from here, and if you don't remember this, let me remind you, with each of these terms we've looked at, there very often is something you can say about that one that you can say about five more. And the question in T.W. Hunt's mind was, which is the one characteristic that you can sort of bring out as being the most significant one or the ones that best connects? And so when he was doing that with Jesus as gate or door, what he saw was, more than anything else, the thing that was unique to this was the idea of choice and opportunity that was provided. Opportunity, not that the door opened or possibly could be opened if we did the things that were necessary to request or to work. And then the choice that we have to accept opportunity or to reject opportunity. And so,
the opportunity, you have to put it in the action.
Yeah, now please understand, that's not to say that any of these are now unimportant. Because I think this gives you a lot of different things to connect to. But of those, T.W. Hunt said the thing that he saw that was unique to that was the idea of opportunity represented by a door that was open or could be open, and then the responsibility for choosing that came.
May I say one thing that reminds me of, Bill, the picture at the back of First Baptist with Jesus knocked on the door that has no handle on the outside. That's supposed to be the door to our heart. So it's almost like the other side of that coin, talking about opportunity and choice. He's not only that, he's the inviter, he's the doorway, and yet we have to be the ones that open the door for him. The door is the opening is there, the framework for the door is there.
Yeah, let's pursue, just for a moment, let's pursue both parts of this. The idea of open doors, it's just a question of whether you go through closed doors. You know, maybe God is calling you to do some things to open those. And the picture that you're talking about, if you haven't seen this picture, been part of First Baptist, you may know. It's a stained glass window.
Yeah, the back.
But that is a reproduction of a fairly famous painting that shows Jesus standing at a door knocking, but there's no handle on the outside.
And those are weeds on Jesus' side.
Yeah, and it looks like that door has not been open for a long time. Now, what I'd like to point out to you is, if you take a look at that image, the door has two sides. And the idea of change or transition, meaning moving from one side to the other side, and Jesus is on one side, if you push this metaphor far enough, and the question is, do I join him there? Now, go back to what we just read in John. What does it say? It talks about sheep, right? And he says, the sheep don't walk out of this for just anybody. Who do they walk out for? But not just any shepherd. How do they know which shepherd it is? They hear his voice. And they know him. Recognize his voice. And I think somewhere in here, we may not have time to chase all of these this morning, but somewhere in here is keep an eye on that idea of who do you follow? Now, unfortunately in this hour I'm handicapped because I don't have Lejean Fernald sitting over here. I don't know how many of you know her. A long time ago, she and Paul were both in the army. They were stationed in Germany, and they were living in a place next to a sheep farm. And I've heard her say this, and I heard her say it again this morning. She was there, and I called on her, and surely she said exactly what I thought she would say. Sheep are dumb. Yeah. First in the back of the room at that moment said, no, they're innocent. I turned to Lejean, and she says, no, they're dumb. Okay? But they're smart enough to know something. They're smart enough to recognize the voice that they need to recognize and to respond to it. To hear it and to know it and to respond to it. So hiding in all of this, behind the picture of the door, is a picture of Jesus' voice and our ability or our lack of ability to hear that voice, to know that voice, and to respond to that voice. Who else comes into the sheepfold and calls for the sheep to follow? That's in this picture too. He calls them thieves and bandits. And then if you go down as far as verse 12, which thank you a few of you have, there are wolves that come in too. You go through the whole of the New Testament, you find lots of references to this. People who come into a church, not with the purpose of bringing people closer to God, but with the purpose of leading them off in some other direction. That is always a risk. What is the remedy? What is the cure for that? Let me change it to cure. I heard somebody say this last week, what's the proper remedy for dandruff? The answer is a tweed coat. So I don't want remedy. I want cure, right? What's the cure? What's the cure? The cure is to be able to hear his voice when he speaks, to know it for what it is, and to be willing to respond to it. That's the cure. You don't get led astray then. And lots of churches have been led astray because those pieces weren't in place. So I think that's as far as I'm going to chase this one, but boy, it's there, and it's going to sit alongside of everything else we talked about today. And you'll see it crop up in a couple of other places. Okay, what else needs to be said here? Somebody said there's a really interesting picture here. It's almost like this door has the keys on the ground in front of the door. All you have to do is pick up the keys and unlock it. And Jesus is on the other side calling. And if you put together some of the pictures that are here, it's almost that stark. That there's things that I can do on my side that help God open the door. And there's things Jesus is doing, encouraging me to open the door. Right. Now,
you know, I see that when people also I'm seeing here is, it just keeps coming back, you know, the camel through the eye of the needle. type situation. There's a lot of things that can be built on as far as our ability to then be able to pick up the key.
Anytime the action starts to depend on us, there's the possibility of things not being done. I want to take you to Revelation 3, where in two successive passages, both in the same chapter, the subject of doors comes up. Now, some of you will recognize already Revelation 2 and Revelation 3. This is a report of the letters that Jesus is sending to the seven churches. And some people think he was sending these letters to specific churches at that time. Other people think he was sending these letters to church ages, in which case we're in the last of those church ages, so we really ought to pay attention to the seventh of these. And still other people think he was sending this letter to all churches, with one letter applying now and a different letter maybe applying at another time in the history of that particular church. I'm pretty convinced that all three views are valid and right. But I do like the last of those, that you sort of figure out which letter your church needs to hear at a particular time. The letters that are involved are the last two. The letter to Philadelphia, starting in verse 7 of chapter 3, and then the letter to Laodicea, starting in chapter 3, verse 14. Let's look at the one in chapter 3, verse 7 first. Write to the angel of the church in Philadelphia and say, here is the message of the holy and true one who has what?
Key
of David. So that when he opens, no one will be able to close. And when he closes, no one will be able to open. Who opens doors and who closes doors? Ultimately, God does. Now he says, I know about your activities. Look, I have opened in front of you a door that no one will be able to close. And I know that though you're not very strong, you've kept my commandments and you've not disowned my name. Verse 10, because you have kept my commandment to persevere, I will keep you safe in the time of trial which is coming for the whole world. Jesus is speaking, and he says, this letter is coming from the one who holds the keys that open and closes, holds the key that opens and closes doors. And when that person opens, nobody's able to close. And I've opened the door for you. Nobody's going to be able to close. To me, that speaks of opportunity. It speaks of doors of opportunity. What did the pastor talk about this morning? What was the subject of the sermon?
Yeah. It's the future of the church and how we do have
the church.
The church itself, and that we do have enemies and a war.
And this was the third week, right? What would you say was the sentence or two in his sermon that caught your ears the most? Would you have an answer to that question?
Building a bridge.
Building the bridge caught your ears. The fact that we're in spiritual warfare caught a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you the sentence that caught my ear. We have the capability to be the kind of church 20 years from now that will be way stronger, way better, way more effective for the Lord than we are today. That's the sentence that caught my ear. Because if you listen to what John Upton said, how many churches are there associated with the Virginia Baptist Board? 1,400, right? Okay. I'm going to argue that Bonaire Baptist has a door of opportunity set before him. How many of those other 1,400 churches have a door of opportunity set in front of them? All of them. But if you listen to John Upton's words, I'm sure he knows that. I know he knows that. But he spoke almost as if Bonaire was the only one. If we start thinking, man, what we've achieved and what we've done is where it ought to be, let's hold it here, I think the pastor's right. We're going to shrivel up and die. If we have a sense that whatever has happened here is a prelude to something bigger, stronger, and more effective in service to the Lord, then we got a chance. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to say that the word "us" really meant a lot to me when he said that, because there are so many diverse people in this world, and if you only consider one of us to be us instead of the whole diversity being us.
if the church is divided, it's going to be real hard for that church to stand. If God's followers fight with each other, it's going to be real hard for God's followers to get anything done.
I think that's true. But I think that picture of whatever we've accomplished is prelude to stronger, better, more active things. And many of those things are things that those of us who are active in leadership now may not be here to see it, though. I can tell you, many of you will know Cliff Ellison in our church. I can remember a sentence that he shared with me a few years ago. The church had put him on a long-range planning committee, and he was 75. And a friend of his said, "What kind of church puts a 75-year-old man on a long-range planning committee?" Okay? Well, let me ask you. If you were to ask me, what's special about Bonaire? What can I point to that will show how special Bonaire is? Can you think of anything better than a church that takes a 75-year-old man and puts him on a long-range planning committee? That's the heart of what Travis was talking about this morning. Do you see it? My brother-in-law died about 2 years ago, I think. Terrible, tragic accident. His widow, my sister-in-law, sent me a book that was his favorite book. And it talks about a man going out planting trees. And they said to him, "What are you doing planting all these trees? You're never going to live to see them grow up." And his response was, "I'm not planting them for me." There's a vision he cast this morning that's achievable. And the heart of that vision is whatever we have achieved pales into insignificance compared to what God could achieve through us if we just open our hearts and start working with Him and with each other. But there's a door of opportunity set in front of every church. Okay? But let's stay in chapter 3 of Revelation. Go to the church of Laodicea. The place I want to take you is over at verse 20, but don't go there yet. I want you to read through this letter and get to that verse and see it in context. Verse 14, write to the angel of the church in Laodicea and say, "Here is the message of the Amen, the trustworthy, the true witness, the principle of God's creation. I know about your activities." He said that in the first letter, didn't he? In the one we read just now. "I know your activities. How you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were one or the other. But since you're neither hot nor cold, but only lukewarm, I'll spit you out of my mouth." Did you notice in the letter to Philadelphia there was no criticism? There was only praise? Only a couple of letters that's true of. He's got criticism for this church. "You say to yourself, I am rich. I've made a fortune. I have everything I need. Never realizing that you're wretchedly and pitiably poor and blind and naked too. I warn you, buy from me gold that has been tested in the fire to make you truly rich, and white robes to clothe you and hide your shameful nakedness, and ointment to put on your eyes to enable you to see. I reprove those and train those whom I love. So repent in real earnest." And now comes the verse. "Look, I'm standing at the door knocking. If any one of you hears me calling and opens the door, I will come in and share a meal at that person's side. Anyone who proves victorious, I will allow him to share my throne, just as I share the throne of my Father, because I've overcome." We think of this, and that the interpretation of that painting that you referred to, we think of this as applying to the door of an individual person's heart, but that's not the context, is it? This is the door to what? To a church. Do you hear it? It's the door to a church. How many people does it take to let God into a church that He's not in yet?
One.
If one of you does what? Read it again. No, not open the door. It's not the first thing He says. At least not in my translation. What's the first thing He says?
Hears
my voice. And does what? Recognizes my voice and responds to my voice and opens the door. I'll come in. You accuse me of embellishing my stories. That's a fair accusation. Sometimes they come out better if I tell you.
There's more about that 375-pound diabetic I'm not going to tell you. There's a great story back there. No. But I will tell you another story. This comes from the 30s in that same little town I was in for most of this week. There was a woman there. She was a widow. She had two sons, both of whom we would say that they were mentally challenged. One of them adopted the little college in that town where my dad worked and spent his days with students. Susan, you're the person in this hour who might remember Madison. I think he might have still been there by the time. I think he's dead now, but he might have been there when you were there. Lloyd Atkinson, who was in the first hour, he remembers Madison very well. There was the day that some of the boys in the dorm decided to convince Madison that he was invisible. They could hear him, but nobody could see. And, you know, he fell for it. His brother, C.V., was a bit older. And C.V. had adopted the business section downtown. Now, this is before they built the bypass and all the business moved out on the bypass. All the business was downtown at this day, and the highway went right through downtown. So C.V. spent his days down here, Madison, up on the hill at the college. The downtown was nice in those days, Susan. In any event, this one Sunday morning, there was apparently a restaurant open. That didn't sound right because I thought they closed everything on Sundays in those days. But there was a restaurant supposedly open. And a bunch of the old boys were sitting around a table, and C.V. was at the table with them drinking coffee. Car pulls up outside, and they could see through the glass at the front. The car was from Ohio, had Ohio plates. Family inside the car. The man in the car gets out, walks into the place, walks up to the table and says, "Guys, it's Sunday morning. My family's with me. We'd like to go to church this morning. Is there a church of God in this area?" And the men start to think around the table what they can say to help this guy. But C.V. starts to speak first. This is a true story. C.V. says, "Church of God, Church of God. You passed Mr. Brown's church. I saw where you came from. And if you turn right at this corner and go up the hill, Mr. Butler's church, it's up there. Mr. Jones's church is on the left. If you keep doing the way you're doing, Church of God, Church of God. Buddy, I don't think God's got a church in this town." Now, I'll tell you, that's probably the most horrible story I know. But it speaks directly to this image. I stand outside the door and knock. One person hears my voice and responds. I'll come in. And I'll come in with that person. How many churches in Virginia? 1,400 Baptist churches in Virginia. How many of them have a door of opportunity open in front of them? All of them. But you're tempted to think, oh, only these few do. So, what is our responsibility as followers? If Jesus is the door, providing choice and opportunity, what's our responsibility?
Open it.
And go through to what? To the different life he calls on us to live. That word transition, right? What was the second most important thing he said this morning? You'll have your ideas. Let me share mine. He said, we need to know how to measure when we've been successful. And he says, there's a number one measure and there's a number two measure. What's the number one measure?
Transform
life. That's what that transition is talking about. When my life is transformed, God makes me a transform agent. Somebody he works through to help other people find a way to transform. That transition of going through the door and entering the life he's calling us to. The life he's calling us to as individuals. The life he's calling us to corporately as a body. A life he's calling us to connectedly with other bodies of other Christians and other places. There was a time when there were 12 disciples. And there were maybe a total of about 120 followers. That's how big Christianity was at one time.
There's something else that's bothering me. I go to the door.
Yeah.
Jesus knocked on the door, and we're on the inside to open the door so that he can come in. That's not a physical movement. It's a movement within ourselves. not an outward movement. So for Jesus to come in, it has to be an individual thing, and it has to be from within us, not an outward motion.
This is where metaphors break down, and you have to see the implication. Okay. What did Jesus say? He talked about himself, the gate and the sheepfold and the bandits and the proper sheep. And what did it say? When he said these things, the people what? Didn't understand what he was saying. Right? Because metaphor often becomes physical and literal and not transforming. I find a lot of things interesting. I find that phrase in the first, they can go in and out. A door of opportunity here is what? It's a door of opportunity for people to come here to find something and to go out from here to do something. And if we're not doing both of those, we're not fulfilling our calling. Okay.
It talks about the key of David, and that singular key.
And the sad thing is you have God's granted power to keep the door closed and keep things as they were. There is something exciting about being part of this group at this time, this community of believers at this time. Lots of good things are happening. The thing that thrilled me today was to hear my pastor say, what we're doing today should, if we're in God's will, pale in significance in comparison to what we could be doing 20 years from now. 20 years from now, Travis will be approaching retirement. Hopefully he'll still be our pastor, but he'll be approaching retirement. Leadership will be passing to another generation. That's a good timeline. 5 years would be too soon, 50 would be too long. But I had a charter member in my first hour, and another person who was 3 months away from being a charter member, who came and said, what would this church look like if it accomplished in the next 50 years what it accomplished in the first 50 years? That's a great question. And it didn't come from one of the young people. Brody, I'm sorry, it didn't come from one of you. It came from one of these wonderful, wonderful older people who spent her life making this church the kind of place that welcomed me and welcomed you. We are in a community, and we have a treasure here, and I hope we know it. And we have opportunities galore. I do think we have more opportunities than a lot of churches have. But I don't think there's a church in the state that doesn't have opportunities.
I loved the way he talked about those under 35 to get the leadership roles over to them. I just thought that was the coolest thing because we have, over 35, have such a responsibility here. That was my important moment to realize, hey, I'm not discounting me. He is adding responsibility to me on what I'm to do for those under 35. And then the transfer of that leadership role, I just thought was the coolest thing. So I cried.
Can I give you guys something to pray about? There's 3 or 4 of us that have been called aside to ask to try to figure out how to make that work. And I don't know how to make it work. How do you inspire somebody to be part of something wonderful? How do you do that? How do you inspire somebody to transition, there's that word again, to transition from being a member to being a leader? Yes, ma'am.
Exactly what you're doing right here is to teach each individual and mentor them, like Travis was saying, so that they feel comfortable in their role before they're sent to do it. You know, that 9 months of learning and having someone who is more spiritually mature than you are teaching you how to go. And helping you, holding your hand while you're
learning. Because I teach the first hour, I think of you guys as the young people.
Oh, really?
You're in that group. But I do point out to you, we made a sea change in this place 10 years ago when we went away from committees to fill membership roles to encouraging people to find their spiritual gifts, to find their passions, and to find the places in the church where they can plug in. I talked to a woman this morning who said, I've been so busy doing these things, I just got burned out. But about 2 months ago, I realized I'm getting my energy back. I'm ready for something else. And now I'm trying to figure out what that is. I've had three people come and say, won't you come join me in this? And I just don't feel like God's leading me in that direction. And I said, then don't go. Don't go in that direction. Keep looking. And she said, well, you know, I feel like he's calling me to do, and she named something we're not doing right now. And I said, I think you got your answer. I think you got your answer. Follow that a little further. Our church, that transition 10 years ago, I think gave us the strength that you see today. But that strength is still coming.
That opposition 10 years ago was strong to doing some of those things.
Yeah, not everybody liked those suggestions our committee put forward. The question that they asked was, well, wait a minute, how are we going to get all these things done that need to be done? And the answer of our committee, I was on that committee, the answer of the committee was, if nobody steps forward to do them, they don't need to be done. And this is, we have taken up the time that I have a right to take up. So we're going to have a word of prayer. A couple of you, I know, have something else to say. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but we need to stop. This is important stuff. What Travis said this morning is the most important thing I think you'll hear today. Maybe some of the things we're talking about here will set a little bit of other things inside it for you to ponder, for you to think about. If you have not found your place of service, if you don't know your spiritual gifts, if you don't know your passions, there's things in this church that are set aside, programs set aside to try to help you there. Mark, welcome. I'm glad you're part of us. And others of you that have joined us recently. What's our word of prayer? Our Father, we thank you for the people that you bring here. And I thank you for the opportunities you put before us. And I pray today that you would show us the way that each one of us as individuals can contribute to the things that this community can do. Recognizing as we do those things, that none of those things are things we can do alone. That these are all things that you are doing, but you've just chosen to do them through us. Keep in front of us a sense of possibility for greater growth, greater strength, greater accomplishments in your kingdom, all because you love us and you care about us and you lead us. We ask all of this in your Son's name. Amen.